Well, good morning again, everybody. Somebody's fired up over here. That's fun. It's going to get warm, I think, today. This is a crazy time of year. I opened all my windows up yesterday in the afternoon because it was so nice and warm out and the sun was shining. And then the sun went down and it got cold and I forgot to close the windows, so my kids and my wife were going around turning the heat up and all the... So I'm pouring heat out the windows and it's not good. But it's going to be nice today, I think. This is why we live here. This is why we live in Wisconsin. It's not for January. So it's looking forward to this afternoon. But we got some good things to do here for the next few minutes. We've been going through a series here, really kind of stemming from or starting from one thing that God tells us. God gives us all kinds of things that God speaks to us. Sometimes he commands, sometimes he comforts, sometimes he counsels. God does all of these things. But we're looking at one specific command that God gave us, and it's this. It's in the book of Romans. It says, "Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." In other words, God says, hey, I want you to be different, to take a different shape than maybe you naturally would. He says, don't conform to the pattern of this world. Well, what does that imply? Well, it implies that there is pressure around us to make us take a certain shape. It's just like Play-Doh or anything. You push on something that's malleable, and it takes the shape, you know, of what's pushing on it. God says, I don't want you to do that. Don't conform. Don't just take the shape of what's around you. Instead, he says, be transformed. And being transformed means taking on a different shape. And so that implies that to some degree, all of us have taken on or become something that needs to change to some degree. Maybe a little, maybe a lot. But God says, hey, I want you to transform. I want you to be different, to take a different shape. That's what we've been talking about here for the past few weeks. Today, we're going to talk about another area. We've been looking at different areas that God wants us to transform in or to take a different shape, to be careful not to just become what's around us. Today, it's going to be morality. That's our transforming point today. Now, morality is an interesting thing, and it's always good to define our terms at the beginning. So when we talk about transforming our morality, what is morality? Well, very simply this, morality is just right and wrong, right conduct. Morality means just doing the right thing. Nate, can you switch that over? Morality means right conduct. It just means, hey, this is what's right to do. There's a right and a wrong. In this situation, I should do this. This would be the good thing to do, and I shouldn't do this, whatever this is. This would be a bad thing to do. So in very simple terms, morality is just right and wrong. And everybody has a sense of morality. Every one of us, every person in the world, I mean, there's probably a few exceptions, but all of us have somewhere in us this innate understanding that in different circumstances, this would be good and this would be bad. This would be right, this would be wrong. Morality, in that sense, is a common theme throughout people. We all have that. In any given circumstance, there's something in us, and we pick it up either internally or from what's around us, but we think, okay, this, you know, I'm doing my taxes. I shouldn't cheat on my taxes. I mean, you know, okay, the right thing to do would be to be honest. And it wouldn't be good to, you know, lie on my taxes. I mean, you know, we all have that. And so the issue here is, as we talk about transforming morality as well, do I have a clear picture of that? And that's really part of it. When you talk about morality, part of it, or really it's a two-step dance, if you will, and the first step is do you know the right thing to do? Do you know what's right in any given circumstance? And the second step is do you do it? That's really how we gauge this. How we gauge whether or not I'm doing this. Do I know the right thing to do? And do I do it? Am I doing it? You know, it's one thing. My kids sometimes don't know the right thing to do. Where, you know, should I, you know, do this or not? And so I teach them, hey, you know, in this circumstance, when your brother says, can you do me a favor? You know, the right thing to do, the best thing, a good thing to do would be to say, sure, what can I do for you? So part of this morality, part of this, you know, understanding what's right and wrong, is just knowing what the right thing to do is. But then there's a second part to it. Knowing it is one thing, doing it is another thing, and that's the second thing. Okay, my sister asked me to go get a glass of milk for her. I know that a really good thing to do would be to do it, but I don't want to. So now what? Okay, so knowing what to do, but then following. Nate, can you flip that over there? Knowing what to do and then doing it. These are really the two steps. Do I know what's right, and do I do it? Those are the I guess, components of morality. And so this is what God says I want you to be transformed in. I want you to have, not just take on the morality, if you will, the rights and wrongs of the world, but to have a different thing. Now, this is a huge topic. And we could, you know, there are so many different specific areas that we could talk about in this issue of morality. What's right? What's wrong? Do I know what's right to do? Am I doing the right thing? I mean, well, I talked about taxes. I mean, there are just so many circumstances where this afternoon and tomorrow and you and I are faced constantly with circumstances, relationships, situations where we're being, you know, we're needing to say, okay, what's the right thing to do here? And how do I do it? Will I do it? I want to focus in on just one specific area today. When we talk about this idea of transform morality, understanding a standard of right and wrong, and then doing it, I want to focus in on one area. The reason I'm going to focus in on one is because it will help us, I think, to get a picture of a circumstance in the world that we live in where the world or the patterns around us try very hard to make us conform to a certain standard, and God says, no, I want you to have a different standard. The world says, I want you to think this way about this and act this way about this. God says, no, I want you to think and act differently. So we're going to focus on this one thing, and I think the principles we learn can apply to all kinds of circumstances. But the one area we're going to focus on is the area of marriage. This certain relationship between a man and a woman has all kinds of components to it. There are relational components, there are emotional components, there are physical components, and we're going to look at this area of marriage again. The goal being to say, okay, here, how can I learn how to not conform to the standard of the world, to the thoughts of the world, but instead to transform, to think and act differently in a way that God says is good and better. So that's what we're going to do, okay? And this is going to be pertinent to you if you're married or not married. It's going to be pertinent, and again, hopefully this will help us in any circumstance that we're in to recognize, okay, in this circumstance, whatever it is, filing your taxes, am I thinking right? Am I acting right? But we're going to focus on this area of marriage, okay? Now, first of all, there is a right or wrong here. When we talk about marriage, this relationship, this aspect of a relationship between men and women, there is a right and wrong here. And I want to read a passage to you. This is in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 3 through 5. Now, this is in the Revised Standard Version, so it's a little bit wordy. I will read it, and then we'll kind of walk through it. This is what it says. For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that you abstain from unchastity, that each one of you know how to take a wife for himself in holiness and honor, not in the passion of lust like the heathen who do not know God. Now, there's a lot in there. Let's just walk through that and translate a little bit. First of all, it says this is the will of God. In other words, God is saying, hey, I do have a standard here. There's a way I want you to be. There's a way I want you to think and act in this. This is what I'd like. And he says, it's your sanctification. Well, that's one of those big words. What sanctification means is to be set apart. So in other words, right from the start here, we see God saying, hey, I want you to be set apart, to be different, to not be like everything else. Then there's a colon. Punctuation is a great thing because it helps us to understand. A colon means I've just made a statement, now I'm going to tell you about that statement. So God says, I want you to be different, and here's how. I want you to abstain from unchastity. Well, again, unchastity, that's a word that, you know, we don't use a whole lot. To be chaste just means to be completely pure. The connotation is in a physical relationship, but what it means is to be completely pure. For example, I'm not a car guy, but I know that you need to put oil in your car. I've been told this thing, and I believe it. And so, you know, you take the cap off your oil pan, and you're putting in oil. And so I've got a box of oil in my garage, and I'm putting oil in my car. And it's, you know, I'm putting it in, but I suddenly run out, and I don't have quite enough oil, you know. So I put in 3 quarts of oil, and I need one more, but I don't have it. So, you know, I wouldn't just put in, well, I'll fill it up with water, you know, or I got some brake fluid here. I'll pour that in there. It's, you know, it's all kind of the same thing. You wouldn't do that because that's not pure. You're mixing things. It's kind of mostly right, but not completely right. And there are car guys in here who putting mostly oil in your oil pan is not a good idea. I'm guessing that's not a good idea. So what God is saying here is, hey, understand something. I want you to avoid unchastity. In other words, I want you to get this absolutely all the way right. I don't want you to get it mostly right and then just fill in the rest as you see fit. I want you to be different. I want you to be set apart. And what that's going to look like is I want you to completely do this. I want you to understand in all ways the standard and to meet in all ways that standard. Abstain from unchastity. Then a semicolon, which says what? I've just said something and now I'm going to add to it. And he says this. That each of you know how to take a wife for himself in holiness and honor. So God says, I want you to be set apart. And what that means is I want you to be completely right in this. I don't want you to kind of get this mostly right. This is important. I want you to get this completely. And here's what it is. I want you to know how to understand this thing called marriage. To take a wife for yourself and to do it well. In holiness and honor, not in the passion of lust like the heathen who do not know God. In other words, there is a standard here, guys. There's a way we need to see this. There is a right and wrong to this, and I want you to understand the right and wrong, to do the right and wrong, recognizing that you live in a world that doesn't get it, that does it differently, that thinks differently, that acts differently, and you're going to have to choose to be different from what's going on around you in this area of marriage. You see that? God says there is a standard here, and it's important. I want you to know it. I want you to do it. I want you to do it completely. So how do we know it? How do we do it? Well, the first thing is to understand it. What does God say? In the book, in Psalm 119, verse 9 says, how can a young man keep his way pure? By living according to your word. So God is going to tell us what the standard is in here. God speaks to us in so many ways, but he begins here. He begins with his book. He begins with the Bible. And he helps us to understand what it is that he's saying through this book. And so that's what we're going to do here for the next few minutes is we're going to ask the question, what is God's standard? God says, I want you to understand the right and wrong in this. I want you to do it. You're going to be pressured to do it differently, but I want you to hang in there and do it my way, and you're going to understand it beginning here. So what is God's standard in the area of marriage? What is the way God wants us to think about it? Well, in the book of Hebrews, and again I'm going to read this in the Revised Standard, and we'll talk through it a little bit. In the book of Hebrews, it says this. Chapter 13, verse 4. I'm in the wrong place here. There we go. Hebrews 13, 4. It says this, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the immoral and adulterous. Okay, we're talking about God's standard for marriage. Here's the first thing. It says, let marriage be held in honor among all. So the first thing we have to understand is God wants us to honor this thing. This is a very, very good thing. And even to understand that, I think we need to back up a little bit and recognize what it is. If you go back to the very beginning in Genesis, when God is talking about marriage, you read the story, you probably read it in Sunday school, where God made Adam, the man, and he put him in the Garden of Eden. And Adam had a pretty good thing going. You know, it was always nice. I believe the weather was nice. There was food everywhere. He was naming the animals, taking care of the plants. Everything was good. The sun shone. He had everything he needed, except God said, you know what? It's not good for the man to be alone. I'm going to make a helper suitable for him. So God made a woman. And Adam said, oh, yeah, That's better. That's good. You know, the lion is great and the elephants and all that, but this is really like me. And I can have a relationship with her that I couldn't have with all these other things. I was alone before. Even though I had all these animals, I was alone. It was just me. But now there's a woman, and so Adam and Eve, it says that they cling to each other. They become one flesh. And this whole idea about marriage is this relational bonding, this relational commitment that is good. And so we have to start from the standpoint that God says marriage, that this committing to each other, this becoming one. I was separate, but now I'm throwing myself wholeheartedly into a relationship with you. It is good. And I want you to honor it. Not just those who are in marriage, but everyone. Whether you're married or not, God says, I want you to honor this thing. Why? Because this commitment is very good. That's what God said. That's what Adam said. It's not good to be alone. But Adam said, it's good when we're together. So all of us, whether you get married, whether you don't get married, whether you're single now, whether you're married now, we need to look at this and say, you know what, this is a good thing, and I'm going to honor it. I'm going to recognize that this commitment, this becoming one, is a good thing. And then, he says, let the marriage bed be undefiled. In other words, part of the picture of this union, part of the purpose of it, is there is a physical relationship, and it's good within that marriage. It begins when that relational commitment happens, and it stays within that boundary, okay? Sex, men and women, their physical relationship, it begins at marriage, and it stays within it. That's what it means for the marriage bed to be undefiled. And God says, hey, this is important. I will judge the immoral and the adulterous. If you get this wrong, it's not going to go well. It's not good for us to get this wrong. So marriage, this commitment to each other, needs to be honored. And the physical relationship follows that. The physical relationship follows the relational commitment. That's what God is saying here. So at the very beginning, what does God say about marriage? Well, it's good. I want you to honor it. I want you to hold it in high esteem, to recognize that this commitment is a good thing, and that the physical relationship follows that. What else does he say? Well, God starts to raise the bar then. In the book of Ephesians, chapter 5, verse 33, this is what he says. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. So now God is saying, okay, here's something else about this marriage relationship. There is a very, very real relational intimacy that is part of it. And God says here, he gives us a picture, and he does this at different places, but he gives us a picture here of what this looks like, and he's raising the standard of what happens within this relationship of marriage. And he starts off with the men, and says, men, you need to love your wives as you love yourself. Now we know what it looks like, what it feels like to love ourselves, don't we? I know what my needs are, and I've become adept at meeting my own needs. I know when I'm hungry, I know how to get food. I know what I like, you know? And I'm willing to make sure that I have some time that I get to do the things that I like. I know what I don't like, and I'm pretty good at avoiding them. In many ways, that's what it means to love yourself. We're all just naturally good at that. God says here, hey, husbands, within this confines of marriage, within this relationship with marriage, I want you to do that with your wife. Do you know what your wife's needs are? And are you adept at meeting them? Just like you are with yourself. Do you know what your wife likes, and do you go out of your way to make them happen? Do you know what is difficult for your wife, and do you avoid those things? God is raising the bar a little bit. In fact, if you read this passage beforehand, he raises the standard even higher. He says, husbands, I want you to love your wives as Christ loved the church and laid himself down for her, gave up his life for her. And what God is saying here is there is such a relational commitment, there is such an all-in in this, that husband, would you be willing to sacrifice your life for her, be it physically or emotionally or your free time or in all of the ways that that happens? There is an unbelievably high personal buy-in in this. And it's the same is true for the wife. The wife must respect her husband. In other words, wife, will you look at him and say, you know what? I am proud of him. And I will tell him I'm proud of him. And I will tell other people I'm proud of him. And I will feel proud of him. And he will know that he's my hero. Will you do that as a wife because your man has a need for that? God put that in him. That's not a bad thing. God created him that way. Will you respect him in that way? And that costs you something, wife, doesn't it? You know, it's hard to do. I know it because I'm married to a wife, and it's hard for her to respect me sometimes because I'm not always respectable. But God says, will you, wife, put yourself all in? And there is an element in this relationship, guys, of real personal giving. And it really is an all-in kind of thing. If you're a poker player, if you play Texas Hold'em, you know, when you're all in, you put all your chips in the middle of the table, and you're either going to win or lose on this hand. That's what God says. This is an all-in situation. I want you to put yourself into this completely and wholeheartedly. I got an ace-king suited, and I'm all in. And I'm going to play this hand out, and I'm going to ride this thing. In this marriage relationship, there is a very personal, sacrificial, all-in aspect to it. I am going to pour myself into this, not based on what I need, but based on what he or she needs. That's part of the standard. That's part of the morality. That's part of the how God wants us to understand this thing, okay? One more thing, one more bit of standard that God gives us, what this looks like. What is God's standard for this? In the book of Matthew, chapter 5, verse 28, says Jesus talking, he says, "But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart." In this relationship, in this marriage relationship, in this aspect of a man-woman relationship, God asks for and demands absolute and complete and total monogamy. Physically, emotionally, relationally, in every single way, in your heart and your mind, you are completely monogamous. That is my wife, and I look nowhere else. That is my husband, and I desire nothing else. I will not wish for something else. I will not look. I will not entertain options in my heart. God's standard for marriage is that you will not entertain options in your heart or your mind. Absolute, complete, total, wholehearted, in every single part of your being, monogamy. That is the standard that God has for this thing called marriage. Okay, so what's God's standard? Well, it should be honored. It is good. The physical relationship follows the relational commitment. There is a complete buy-in, a total selling yourself to it for the other person's benefit, and an absolute giving up of desiring anything else. Complete and total monogamy. That's God's standard in this. What is the world's counterproposal? Again, we're talking about, God says, I don't want you to conform to the world. We looked at this, God said, here's my standard, but you're going to have a very different standard out there in the world. What is the world's standard? What is the world's counterproposal, if you will? The world's counterproposal is that marriage is optional. This thing called marriage, when you're talking about the situation between men and women, it's optional. It might be good for some people. It might be good in certain circumstances. It might be good for a time, but it's not, it's optional. You can take it or leave it. You can decide whether it's right for you. You can decide how to manage it within, you know, if you decide to do it, how long are you going to do it? What are you going to do within it? The whole thing is optional. That's what the world says, that it's not as cut and dried. It's not It's not such a big deal. Because the world says that marriage is optional, it also leads us to some different things. Number one of them is that it's okay to touch. It's just okay for you to touch and to get yourself your physical needs satisfied in whatever way makes sense to you, in whatever way might present itself to you. So the world tells us that, yeah, you have physical, sexual needs. It's fine for you to get them met with someone who isn't your wife, who isn't your husband. It's fine for you to do that. If you're not married, you know what? That's okay. You just You can get those needs met in some other way, and that's just fine. Why? Because marriage is optional. You have these needs. They're real. Go ahead and do what you need to do. Because the world says this, they say that it's okay for you to satisfy yourself, and that masturbation is just a natural, normal part of a man's sexuality, and you just go ahead and do that because you have these needs, and it's just fine. That's what the world says. If marriage is optional, then it's okay for you to satisfy yourself physically any way that you can, any way that makes sense, any way that you need to, and that's how it's presented. You have a need that needs to be met, so go ahead and meet that need. That's what the world says. If marriage is optional, it's okay for you to touch someone else or yourself. If marriage is optional, it's okay for you to look. That's what the world says. It's okay to look, you know. Country music, I like country music, but a lot of country music has some form of the phrase, the woman is walking away from me and I'm watching her go. And you know what that means. Gazing at her body and looking. The world says that's just fine. What's the big deal? Who's going to get hurt by that? Because, you know, you're just looking, you know. And it's almost impossible not to look in the world we live in. So that's just fine for me to do that. Or a woman to look at that guy, or to look at that couple and wish that you had it or something. The world says it's fine to look. What can be harmed by that? Well, remember what God says, complete, total, absolute monogamy. If you're looking, you're entertaining part of your mind. But the world says, no. If marriage is optional, looking is clearly just, there's no harm in that. That's what the world says. If marriage is optional, it's okay to compare. If you are married, you can freely compare your spouse to the latest model and make those comparisons. And that's just fine. In fact, that's your right, almost, to do. And women, I think maybe you might struggle with this in different ways than men. Men tend to compare physically. Women tend to compare relationally. And I'm not trying to be offensive here, but the reality is that our world is awash in pornography, which asks men to compare. It's also awash in romance novels, which asks women to compare. Romance novels are just emotional, relational pornography, is all it is. Because here's what you're doing. If my wife read romance novels, I would be in a world of hurt. Because in a romance novel, the hero is sculpted, always. You look at the covers of those things, there's never a short, soft guy like me on the front of the cover. Some 25-year-old Adonis. He can run down a wild animal and kill it humanely with his bare hands in the woods. He can bring it home and cook it while he's giving his woman a back rub. He's sensitive, he's open. And if my wife reads that and she's looking at me and I'm sitting on the couch with a beer watching football, I do not compare. I am not going to measure up to that at all. And these romance novels paint an absolutely ridiculous picture, and you're asked to compare your husband to that. And the world says, that's fine. That's fine. Why not? You know? Why not? If marriage is optional, it's okay to dream. It's okay to dream about, you know what? What if I would have married that guy that took me to the prom our senior year? What if I would have married my college sweetheart instead of this guy? What if my wife was just a better cook? Or what if my wife just understood me more? And we're told that it's okay for you to fantasize about another person or, you know, what could happen. If marriage is optional, well, just go ahead. Just kind of let your imagination go wild. And it's kind of an escape from this thing. That's the world's counterproposal to God. That's the world's counterproposal to what God says he wants this thing called marriage to be. You know what? It's optional. Because it's optional, you can touch and look all you want because you have needs that have to be met. You can compare and dream all you want because, you know what, maybe you got a bad deal here and you might just need to change models. That's what the world says to us. God's rebuttal to this I love this passage. If you come and talk to me about marriage, soon in the conversation, I will probably get to this passage. It's in Proverbs 5. And I'm going to read of this verse and actually one more that's not up there. It says, may your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. A loving doe, a graceful deer, may her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be captivated by her love. I love that because God's counterproposal is this. Why do you do all these things? Why do you touch, look, compare, and dream? Because you want to be satisfied. What does God say? If you keep my standard, if you understand it and keep it with the wife of your youth, with this person that you enter into this committed, all-in relationship with, absolute, complete monogamy, if you do that, what are the words God uses? You'll be blessed. You'll rejoice. You'll be satisfied, he says. You'll be captivated. Oh my goodness. Guys, what do we do all that stuff for? Because we want to be satisfied. We want to be captivated. God says, yeah. Yeah. I want you to have that too. You will be blessed. You will rejoice. You will be captivated. You will be satisfied. Where? With the wife, with the husband of your youth, with that one person when you go all in relationally. When you choose to understand my standard and you choose to do it. If you choose to be moral in this circumstance, if you understand what's right and wrong, and if you do what's right and wrong, this is what God says will happen. The world says something very different. And we have to choose, what am I going to do? Morality is understanding what's right and wrong. That's what we've been talking about here. God says, this is my standard. It's good. The physical follows the relational commitment. There's a complete and total buy-in on your part. And it's absolute, total monogamy. That's God's standard. The world says something very different. You and I need to choose what we're going to believe. I believe God's standard. I do. But the second part of morality is what? We understand it. The second part is what? Doing it. I think that many of us can look at this, God's standard, and say, that is impossible. I cannot do that. I can't do it. It's too hard. I'm surrounded by things that beg me to look and compare. I maybe have already failed in some of these areas. It is not possible for me to meet that standard. I am here to tell you that it is possible. This is possible. This is not an impossible dream. This is not an impossible standard. God did not set this bar so high and say, I want you to get over it knowing you couldn't do it. You and I can do this. We can be transformed in the renewing of our mind. And just for a few minutes, I want to talk about some things that God can give us, ways that God says, now this is what I want you to do to make this play itself out. First, is recognize that all of this is a choice that you make. In the book of Job, Job is an interesting book. It's written about a guy who faced lots of these moral decisions. Just like we do, he lived his life like we do. He was faced all the time with what's right and wrong, what am I going to do? And it says that he did it very well. He understood in many, many, many ways what was right and wrong, and he did it. He chose to do the right thing. He struggled like all of us, and if you read Job, you see some of his struggles, but he did this very well. And in Job 31:1, he says an interesting thing here that I think we need to, that can help us as we say, I want to meet this standard. And he says, I've made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully at a girl. You know, when you look or touch, It's a choice that you make, and you can choose not to. Now, I don't say that lightly. I don't say that lightly. If you've heard me speak before, maybe you've heard me talk about, as a younger man, and not even so young, how I really wrestled with some of these issues to the point where I really had some addictions that. And I understand when I say to you, oh, just don't do it, it's not that simple. And yet, one of the things that helped me as I was working through some of these physical issues is to realize and to have God tell me very clearly, you know what, Rob, nobody is making you do anything. You're making choices to look. You're making choices to touch. You're making these choices, and you can choose to do something different. And at that point, I made a covenant with God and with a few men that I knew well, that I'm going to be different. And I wasn't different instantly, but that was the beginning. It helped me say, you know what? I can be different, and I'm going to choose to be different. I will not just continue down this road. And it was hard, and I struggled, and there were failures. But I am to a point now where it really, truly is in my past. It is not part of me in any way anymore. And I'm so grateful, but it started with this. God, I will be different. Help me. One or two men who knew me well, I want to be different. Help me. Ask me. You can make that choice. It is a choice you make. It does not get forced upon you. You choose. Will you begin by choosing, I want to be different, and I will set my foot on the road to be different? If you do, then it starts, so much of it starts right here between your ears, right here in your mind. I believe it's a true statement that as people, we will do what we think about, and we will become what we do. What you think about will eventually work itself out, and you will act on it. If you act on something long enough, it will define you. It will become who you are, what you do. So you want to change who you are? Change how you think. What you think about right now will define in some ways, in many ways, who you are 10 years from now. So what do? Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. We need to run our thoughts through this filter and ask, is this a noble thing that I'm thinking about? If I'm looking at that woman walking away, is that noble? Is it lovely? Would it just be really fun if I shared that with my wife? Is this admirable? And if I said that, would someone say, man, you're a great person? Test your thoughts. Test them. And if they're not up to par, you can take it captive and make it obedient to Christ. You can choose what you think about. Listen to me very carefully. You can choose what you think about. Water is a powerful, interesting thing. Water running over a certain course for a long time will create a channel. Even in solid rock, if water runs over that rock long enough, it cuts a channel. And then it will always flow down that channel. But if you divert the water and make it run down another course, it'll always try to get back to this channel, but if you force it this way long enough, it will cut an entirely new channel. Your thoughts are the same way. Your thoughts tend to go down the way you've always thought. But you can build a dam and make your thoughts go somewhere else. Now, your thoughts are going to want to jump that dam. Your thoughts are going to want to work around and get back down the same channel. But if you force your thoughts in another way long enough, what happens? It cuts an entirely new channel. You end up thinking differently. You can take your thoughts captive. You don't have to compare. You don't have to dream. You don't have to look longingly. You don't have to wish things were different. You don't have to do it. It's difficult, but you can change it. God wants us to understand this. And again, guys, this is true of any area of morality that you may struggle with, not just this one of marriage, understanding and carrying out God's plan for it. This is true in all kinds of things. Whatever right or wrong issue you may struggle with, it begins with saying, God, I will be different. Help me to make different choices. And God, I'm going to start that by thinking differently. Help me to think differently. Help me to take my thoughts captive and to make them these things so that my actions can follow. And I will follow that. It is God's will that you should be sanctified, guys, that you should avoid unchastity, that you would understand God's plan for marriage, you would understand his perfect will for it, that you would be absolutely altogether right in this. What is his plan? That it's good. That your physical needs are met when that starts and only within that relationship. That within the relationship, there is a complete and total selling out of yourself for the other person, and that you make the choice, I will desire nothing but you. I do not desire another woman. I do not desire another man. I am completely monogamous with you. This is God's will for you. Not that we act in the passion of lust like the heathen who do not know God. That's true of all areas of morality. Do you know what's right? Do you do it? Father, I just pray that we would. Pray for myself, for each one of us, that in every area, God, we would know what's right and we would choose to do it. I just pray in this area, Lord, in this foundational, fundamental relationship between men and women, that we would know what's right. We would not conform to the pattern of this world, but we really truly would be transformed. We would think correctly. We would understand and believe your standard. And then God, help us, give us the courage and the perseverance to do it, to be different. That's our desire, God. Help us to do it in this area and in every area. In Jesus' name, amen.